Welcome to the Reckless Dice Podcast. I'm Jesse Burke, your host. Across from me, we have Doug Beard.
Welcome.
We have Joel Gordine.
Oh, hello.
And Joe Lucchetta.
Beard number two.
Beard number two. That's what we'll call you. So, we just finished a pretty epic game of 40K, 8th edition. And a lot of the people at the table here are relatively new players to the hobby. We have Joe, you've been playing now for about
2 to 3 months. I mean, yeah, this is my first real match.
I think October was the swap meet where you got your first models.
Right.
And then Doug, you've been playing now and building for the
better part of... Started the end of August.
All right.
Yeah.
And we fancy that we have Joel's anniversary.
Yes.
Happy Tauversary.
Thank you.
I hope your little blue men are pleased.
Yeah, I got it for Christmas a year ago. Was my star collecting box, so...
That's right. So, what I wanted to talk about this episode is... I mean, I've been playing the hobby for a long time, so I have a lot of long-running preconceived notions of how things should work, or what I think people should do to get in the hobby and enjoy it certain ways, and I recognize that's unfair in a lot of ways, but I really want to know from you guys, at different stages of this hobby that you've obviously shown interest in diving into... How are things going at these various stages of enjoyment? Like, you guys have played very different number of games. You've painted different number of models. You've read the rule books. Some of you have codex. Some of you don't. There's a lot of different components on how things are going for you. And I think as the newest player, I wanted to have Joe jump in first.
Absolutely. You know, especially after this first game, it makes me realize how much I don't know at this stage. You know, at this point, 2 to 3 months in, all I can really do is try to dump a bunch of time in getting my army painted, which I spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks just getting a big army. I got a good Christmas gift, so my point values went from like 750 to I think I'm well over 2,000 points now.
Thank you, Mortarion.
Yes, Mortarion. He's going to be such a pleasure to paint. But I mean, I just didn't realize how multifaceted the hobby is. I didn't realize how much I was going to love painting and being with these guys here, just awesome mentors. Jesse here, who just has, like he just said, has been in the hobby for so long that, I mean, he's just a wealth of knowledge. And Joel, who, you know, got me into it in the first place.
It seems a long time ago, but it really wasn't that long.
It was months, you know?
Yeah.
It's
pretty amazing. Absolutely. Actually.
So, I mean, the interesting thing is, I even learned about you through Joel, where Joel, there's only one letter apart, and
it's very difficult.
It's really hard. Beard 2 was Joel had told me that this guy who my kid plays soccer with, and he's really interested in Kingdom Death. And I'm like, oh my God, like that's such a small audience of people that's slowly growing with the Kickstarter. And I'm like, well, that's fascinating. Who is this guy? Yeah. And then that's kind of where you started diving into the hobby, because you were looking to get some practice painting Kingdom Death models.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and it's just so funny how things have flipped, because initially I wanted to just maybe dip my toes in the water when it came to 40K, paint a few models, just get some practice, because I'd already played some Kingdom Death, and I just knew that I wanted to really paint fantastic models for those. And in the grand scheme of things, like, the Kingdom Death models just really ticked me off when it came to assembly, and now I'm just thoroughly enjoying assembling and painting the 40K models, and then as I delve into the lore, and delve into the gameplay, and delve into all the different stuff that is involved with it, it's just so much deeper and gratifying than even a board game like Kingdom Death is.
Well, I think we will for sure put a couple pictures of each of the four of our models up on this post, so we can get a sense of progress for everybody. Because you guys have made some incredible progress of just learning to paint, to model, and then working your way into the strategy of the games. I mean, Doug, let's pass it over to you. How is your army going?
Well, I have an issue with completionism. I started off early with, as you well know, probably about a 500-point army, and it was, you know, try to get up to speed, get to about 750.
Now, what army are you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
well,
my fault.
Obviously, you're Joe or Beard too. You're playing
Death Guard,
because we mentioned Mortarion. That hopefully was obvious.
Which Jesse started me on by breaking off his Dark Imperium set and starting me with that.
Right. And then, Doug, you're playing
Dark Angel army. I'm actually very happy with it. The only issue that I have is just every model seems to appeal to me in some way, and I just love the army in general. So I've gone from about a 750-point army to just over about 4,000 points, and I don't haven't even touched the Raven Wing yet. Probably not intending to go that direction, but the Terminators and the Deathwing and the Dark Angels and the army, I just can't seem to finish anything, any specific unit or model, because I'm constantly building and growing my army. They're all primed and painted, but not completed.
Yeah, I mean, I love looking at your army. You've got this field of green, and you could almost like set them all in a row where everybody's kind of had like everybody's had 10% done to them. Then there's a smaller section that's had like 30 or 40% done to them. Another smaller section that's got like 60 and then 80 and then 90. But nobody's at the 100 point, right?
We're getting there.
It's like when I'm guessing it's one of those armies that I think I said this to you the other day where no one unit is going to be done until the entire army is done in one day.
The final base.
They're all going to cross the finish line together.
It sounds like me.
Something that's been cool about watching Doug do it is what's nice is everyone comes to the battlefield with a little bit of flair, and so you know you're not going to be seeing any bare plastic with Doug and even Joe around. They've been so committed to painting these gigantic forces. It blows my mind.
I love that we've ingrained that mentality into this gaming group early.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you just don't come to the field with plastic models.
Don't do it.
And I love that we all kind of jokingly accept that that's what we expect from each other. Like, even hearing Doug say, like, no, I can't bring these guys to the game this weekend. Sorry, they're not primed yet. They're only primed. They don't have, you know, their first color on them.
They have been inked.
And it's, you know, I love that because it elevates the quality of the table. It elevates the expectations of everybody in the group to meet a minimum standard. And I realize that kind of puts the group into an elitist category where you're kind of like shunning the things that aren't done, because I mean you can't deny the fact that a large percentage of gamers out there don't have their armies painted, because it's a commitment. I mean, could you even try and put number of hours on how long it's taken you to finish painting an army?
Well, you certainly couldn't put a value on the army. Like, I mean, Joe, I'll buy your army, how much? Are you kidding? Like, how do you value such a thing? The amount of hours that Joe's put into painting the Death Guard is like...
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you how much they're all worth because they're on eBay right now, but the question is that enough money for you to part with it?
Yes,
it's
probably not.
And that's the hardest part to say.
And perhaps it's a good segue to another topic. It's funny how personal Warhammer becomes. I mean, I struggle with sportsmanship in Warhammer because I get so frustrated with the game. It's so finicky. And you become so personally tied to your army and your units... Mm-hmm. And I watch people, you know, I watch myself get frustrated. I watch everyone get frustrated. It's so difficult to handle oneself properly at a Warhammer table. It's funny, I consider myself such a good sport at almost every game on Earth. And I struggle with sportsmanship in Warhammer. It's a frustrating, difficult, frightening game. Everything gets annihilated in this game. It's so fast. I mean, we just played a 2,000-point game. And we called the game after two turns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two and a half? Two full turns.
No, two full
I mean,
turns.
That is crazy. It took us like 4 hours to do it, too. It's like, yeah. I think that's...
Well, you are helping us new guys as well.
Sure. It's a tough... So what challenges is everybody facing? Like, now that we have a couple games under our belt, Joe's starting a little more... You've only played a few.
Exactly. My focus has been solely on painting, to the point where, you know, I think I have less of a grasp on the rules as Doug here, who, you know, has maybe slapped less paint on his models, but he's definitely got a better handle on the rules of the game than I do, for sure.
Is it frustrating?
No.
When you look at everything and go, I don't... Like,
no,
what am
no,
I rolling?
No.
What's
because
going on?
Because I'm a collector, so when I'm painting, you've seen, I've collected tons of paints. I mean, like, I got lucky in Christmas and got some good loot, so I got to collect more of my models. I love having variants. I love collecting every single... That part of me is so satisfied with it. And then playing the game just is, like, the fun... You know what? If you outwit me, so be it. You know, like, I'm okay with that because, like, I just, the personal relationships that I gained through this game are just so awesome and not something I had in Georgia. So it's like a welcome home to me. And it's just great to have you guys.
Warhammer's one of those games I love winning, but I probably lose more games than I win, I think. I like putting my models on display. I like seeing them on the table, interacting with the terrain. Mm-hmm. You know, I like imagining the scenario that's playing out, and if my guys are getting blown up, that in my head ends up being a really cool story, and like that's fun. I don't mind losing. I mind losing when it gets weird or finicky or rules lawyery or things like that that can tend to come up with tournaments and things, but rarely does that really happen.
I think it might be fun to try some true objective and lore games.
So we were talking about that.
I think that might be really entertaining, and we should explore the idea just to kind of jettison like some of the frustration that can come. And I think that that might be really nice just for a change of pace.
From the rules perspective, they call more of the open play type of games where it's less restrictive on you have 2,000 points, you have 2,000 points. It's like, well, this is a story mission where the Tau are defending against a massive horde of so-and-so, and you have, you know, 1,500 points, and you have whatever's in your collection, and, you know, every turn, various abilities are available. You come up with something that's cool to everybody, and that's what you play, and you forego the element of it really being strictly fair.
Yeah.
And you play it for what it is and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the story that happens. It's like they call it narrative play and open play, and I can't... I'm guessing that must fall into narrative play.
That'd be narrative, sure.
Yeah.
In terms of our individual armies, I mean, Joe is probably the exception, but the rest of us have a lot of games under our belt with our armies. What's your favorite party? You mean you obviously Joe still contribute, but what's your favorite party army? What's your least favorite party army?
Let's start with Doug there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's again part of my problem being, as Joe mentioned earlier, you just like to collect and just have a swath of models. So probably right now my most recent model I picked up makes the most sense. The Aggressors. Not because of what they do on the table, but just because how they look, just chunky, fatty, and they just bring the heat. And for what it's worth, I think that probably my favorite right now. So the modeling and painting is probably my favorite spot.
I feel bad in our last game knowing that you just built them. It was their first game, and they got blown off the table without firing a shot.
It happens.
With a witness.
And the funny thing is if you think back, that's actually how all our games play. Whatever everybody's new model is gets eliminated first turn. Like, it happened with your Redemptor Dreadnought your
Absolutely.
First game.
Yep.
It happened to, like, I think it must have happened to your... It happened, and Joel, it happened to your big Riptide.
The first game we played. First game I had ever played.
Bloom off table turn one.
Didn't really know what I was doing. I
realize that's very discouraging.
Well, I think what I was saying more than just our favorite model is, what's your favorite thing about playing Dark Angels, and what's your frustration with them? Because maybe I'll go first, since I brought it up. And
like, I'll point out, you're the only player at the moment who does not have a codex. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of outside the realm, and definitely I fought that battle with a flag flying. Like, that's been really challenging, I think, to be one of the army that gets it not in the first year. It's really hard. I mean, obviously, you guys are my friends, so it was not a difficult battle. It was not a long battle. You guys were like, yeah, that is blatantly unfair. Because these things have no point values, right?
You're referring to army and chapter abilities.
Yeah, or just having access to a list of stratagems. What is that worth, right? I mean, what is that flexibility worth? Well, it's worth something. Or like, every army has an overlay. What is that worth? If you have an army without a codex, you have none of that. So, to some extent, I am playing at a disadvantage at all times, but it doesn't feel that way necessarily all the time anymore that I'm so... With the chapter approved, at least I have a relic. I have one stratagem. It's fine. I'll get my codex and everything will work out. I think my favorite part of playing the Tau is that you can do some unbelievably impressive maneuvers that can swing a game in your favor very quickly, and they're very clever and they're very intricate. And I think my least favorite part of the Tau is sometimes I feel like I'm playing an all-or-nothing army, and it depends a little too much on the dice for my liking, because the Tau don't hit very well, right? So sometimes I feel like if I roll badly, then I kind of just peter away. Like, you know, if the pieces fall for the Tau and you roll poorly, if you roll below average, I feel like I suffer more than other armies, just because there's some things I'm doing that are put in place to be a little subpar for the Tau, because they do some things when all the pieces are working and you're rolling average and the cogs are in place. They seem really, really overwhelming. But it feels sometimes like an all-or-nothing army, and I don't love that sometimes. It feels like, I really just won the game on my own, or I didn't do anything. That's how it feels. Anyway, what about you guys?
For me, I love about my army that they feel representative of me in a way. Like, and Jesse couldn't have known this when he bestowed the army upon me, but, you know, just these large, hulking, beastly horror just slowly moving across with pustules and guts hanging out. It's just like, I mean, if you ask my wife, she'll tell you how disgusting I am. Foul mouth and all this stuff, you know? And it's just, I'm so attracted to it. And the new models are just so amazing with the detail that I thoroughly enjoy that part of it. But about my army, what I do like is how tough they are. And since it's kind of new for everybody else to play it, it's just nice to see the reaction about how tough they are, you know, and how people are just surprised.
There were a lot of heads shaking on our sides of the table. Doug and I were like, my God.
Yeah, how many wounds did you save?
What do I do?
Right.
Yeah it's
right.
fun.
Right. I know. And I got to see today, you know, that I do have quite a few options and that I have to revolve around the strengths of my army. And I guess maybe that would also be the part that I don't like about the army is that it's restrictive in a way, you know. It's not just free play where everybody can kind of do the same thing, but I guess that's what gives your army character, which is not all that bad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of those armies that's never going to have long range weapons.
Exactly, you know. Slow. You're not going to have
like fast moving flyers,
right?
Like, the speed right. is never going to be in your roster of options.
Sure.
No matter how you cut it.
Yeah.
And every army kind of has that strength or weakness. And hopefully, you know, that disgustingly resilient, all that toughness is what counteracts the lack of options. Because my army actually operates in a similar capacity. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Doug's army has extreme versatility, right? Joel, your army has this glass cannon synergistic thing going on. And, you know, Joe, your army has this incredible resilience with a very limited, I think, roster available for troops.
Sure.
So, and my army, I've analyzed a lot and still don't know how I feel about it, but I feel I also have an incredibly limited option of number of troops available to me. I think I have like 12 or 13 unit types in the whole army, and so there's no flyers, right? There's no deep striking. I have one infiltration unit and one stratagem I can use to counteract that. I have no troop transports. You know, I have it is pure. But to compensate for that, which is I think my favorite part, is these cheap mid-range walker tanks. You know, whether it's the Castellan robots or the Dune crawlers or the Iron Striders, all these kind of like 6 or 10 wound dreadnought-esque models that run around with pretty nice weapons and pretty decent maneuverability. That is my army. That's the backbone of it, and frankly my favorite part of it. I would say I miss the other components, except those happen to be components I would never choose in an army anyway, so I'm very pleased with that. I don't particularly favor flyers. I don't like heavy tanks. So I love infantry armies and I love dreadnoughts. Like, any Space Marine army I've ever made has always been the same thing. Like, no tanks, just dreadnoughts and troops. This army just actually coincidentally happens to be designed that way. I didn't choose that when I jumped into it. I chose it because they looked sweet and giant dusters and robots inside. But from a frustration perspective, I don't really know, to be honest. I think I'm actually very pleased with them, and I'm slowly learning how to use them. Their firepower is overwhelming. So as long as that's working, things are great, but as soon as someone gets up close, my army just folds like a paper cup.
Yeah, the perceptions of each other's armies are also interesting. It's always interesting to hear from other people. But Doug, what's your favorite part or your frustration with them?
Well, I mean, I'd rather start with my frustrations. It's actually the exact same as Jesse's frustration. He, you know, his concern is there's not enough models. My concern is also the number of models available, because I have this squirrel mentality where if I see a new model, I have to go buy it. And the problem is, I have no real dedication in my army with a Dark Angel Corps, with TAC Marines, and everything wrapped around it, from Hellblasters to Aggressors, Intercessors. I mean, you name it, I've got them. But then you have the Raven, or the Deathwing that I've already gone into. I'm up to, 15, 20 Terminators already. I can't really stay specific into any one area. So my issue is the same as Jesse's, the number of models. It's just too overwhelming for a guy like me. I have to just keep buying. And eventually I'm going to run out of things to buy, and I think at that point maybe I'll finally settle into my comfort zone with my army. I can actually pick and choose what to take to war every game.
I mean, I think you've played now 6 games or so. I think
this was number 5 or 6, yeah.
And I think each time during those 6 games, you're trying something new. You've, yeah. Like, you fielded a big squad of Terminators, too many, which maybe kind of like was counterintuitive, yeah. And then or counterproductive. And then you did another one, which was, today's game was almost all infantry.
Right.
And then, you're kind of like striking balance and trying out new units and finding the ones you like, right. The ones that don't really perform. And that's part of gaining experience in building your army list.
Certainly.
Everybody's... Joel, you certainly honed in on I can say with certainty some percentage of your points when you build a list are going to be doing a certain thing, and I can anticipate what that is. And then the rest of those points are your experimental zone. Like, you really like your strike suits and your generals and the deep striking component they can do. And I can count on that showing up in an army list. And then I know that you're experimenting with the rest. And I feel like as everybody plays more and more and more, you're going to find some comfort zone in what's a core component of your army as a permanent feature, and then other parts that fluctuate.
Yeah. I think that's probably how it will go. I think that we bring up a really good point. I think the most difficult thing in Warhammer now is building a list.
Building a list and targeting priority, I think, are the two biggest components.
Yeah, you really... Building a list is the most difficult, though, because you're trying to fill in gaps and figure out what you want to do and what you want to do well, and then you're going to come up against somebody, you have no idea what they decided they wanted to do or what they're going to do well. So you kind of come to the field and hope what you brought was kind of what you thought you were going to face, you know? And so it's always very interesting. Each game is unique in that way. And I think you can try and bring a balanced list at all times, and that's cool. I don't think, as Jesse points out, you're not going to learn quite as much if you bring balanced lists all the time. Because in the end, face it, we have limited things to choose from. I mean, except for Doug, who has everything. I don't have a million models, so Jesse's right. If at a certain point cost, you're going to see the same units. I simply don't have 4,000 points of guys, right?
Yeah, so the question is, is Joe going to bring Mortarian today, or is he not? Or correct. Are we going to see a boatload of Terminators? Or are we going to see a boatload of Poxwalkers? I mean, with this game was your first chance to really explore the impact that, like, the Marines could have versus the Poxwalkers.
Sure.
What the bloat drone's capable of. And... this was the first game I tried the castle and robots. I tried the Fulgurite Electro Priests, or whatever they're called, even though they sat on the side of the board picking their nose.
It's so funny, but they could have really swung the staves well. I mean, it just depends on where things were placed and what happened, and that was just a matter of what happened in the game. And you're right, they were useless, but at the same time, it was funny. Jesse brought a tank, and we brought a list with nothing for it to shoot. And we did that fully intentionally.
Yeah.
But at the same... So that was good on us. Good choice. But then we were completely wrong in that Jesse has always fielded an infantry army. And he fielded nothing of the kind today. So we had a whole bunch of guys with strength 5 shooting and armor piercing. Because I was like, everything's going to be weak.
Yeah.
Joe's going to bring Poxwalkers. Jesse's going to bring a bunch of dudes. We're going to have Space Marines. They're toughness 5. That's good. All my guns are 5. Who cares if they're toughness 5? Let's light them up. And then the entire board was toughness 7. So we were pretty outclassed pretty early.
Yeah. I think
so. Brought all his points were in these robots. Yeah. So, like, you never really know what you're going to get, and that's part of the fun. And I think that but that's also part of the difficulty. It's really hard to build a list.
Sure. I mean, 3 really lists hard. Just for today, Nice. I mean, because I just didn't know what we were doing. We were so close to picking that Mortarian list that I'd like to go back in time and play that just to see
I'd
what that
I'd still like to play him, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a beast.
Right.
I think we also have not done a lot of straight one-on-one games for a little while as the group has grown and the number of players we have coming at a time. We've done a lot of team games or a lot of small games. And these team games offer an interesting component, which is that we have the weaknesses of each army don't necessarily play out, or the strengths get doubled up sometimes where, like, you are a glass cannon army, for Joel, and Doug, you are a very above average middle of the line, kind of even keel army with a lot of strengths and very few weaknesses, but you don't really excel.
The jack of all trades, yeah. Master of none.
I mean, but I would never call Space Marines average. They're distinctly above average, but they're even keel at that. Exactly, right? And but then, Joe and my armies were very interestingly paired as well. I mean, mm-hmm. Joe's army is incredibly resilient and difficult to kill. And we strategized around that, knowing that he's going to walk up and you have two choices. Because I'm going to create a huge fire line in the back and be protected by you.
Yep.
So you guys had two choices. It was either shoot me and don't get shot back to eliminate the firepower, but deal with Joe when he will inevitably get to you. Or shoot at Joe so he's weaker when he eventually gets to you, but leave me open to fire at you. It felt like a lose-lose scenario in our minds, so that was the strategy we went with. And I'd love to know, like, on the other side, like, what was your guys' plan going into that?
Well, our plan was quite strong if you had fielded more infantry. That's really what boils down to.
Yeah.
I mean, the Castellan robots, they were your only unit on the board. They killed everything. I don't know if you guys paid attention.
No, they
killed everything. Yeah. Every unit that got killed was the robots.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any exception. And
well,
it,
I mean,
was there an exception?
Yeah, my onager killed two tanks.
The exploding
bloat
drone.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah,
we fielded transports fully intending them to die.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even paying attention to them. Yes, I should clarify. So our plan was to field transports to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we knew that Warhammer, unfortunately, it is a game of first turn. You guys went first. You had an advantage. Going first, it's just a shame, but we all need to just acknowledge it. 8th edition is a first turn game. So what you have to do is you have to play a strategy where you're comfortable with what am I going to do if I don't get the first turn.
Yes.
Because if you do get the first turn, then you just go, okay, well, I have an advantage to win, so what am I going to do to make the most of it?
Let's go back to the first turn thing. If you're
yeah, in
okay,
fact, we should talk about
let's
it
talk
because
first
that's
turn.
Something that's coming up on forums. It's something that I've noticed.
So
it's,
I agree, first turn is incredibly effective.
So good, yeah,
can be effective though. I think would be the qualifier though. Mm. Most weapons in the game have a range of 24 inches, which means that they cannot shoot the turn that you deploy. There's just no way.
Hmm.
You're always 24.1 inches away, right? So, 30-inch guns, which have shown up in the Primaris Space Marines, it's one of my primary weapons, and it comes up in a couple other armies, and then you go into, like, 38 inches, and the big guns. Okay,
yeah.
We all know they've always been able to shoot. No problems there. But the infantry unloading on turn one is a more or less new concept, and 30-inch guns... It's a big deal.
Mm.
You know, having a couple 10-man squads getting to fire at some infantry is cool. But realistically, turn one is going to be heavy weapon firing and not much else in almost every army's case. So that means you probably have 3 or 4 las cannons and 1 or 2 plasma guns or something like that that's coming across the board, which is easily enough to kill a dreadnought or to cripple a couple tanks or to, you know, take out an aggressor squad and a couple Terminators or something. Like, some combination of that is a guaranteed loss. But the majority of your army, let's call it 50 to 70% of your army, is not firing turn one. Ideally, though, you probably move forward because there's objectives and other crap you got to do. So the turn two person has this alternative. They have... All of a sudden, all these guys who are within 24 inches that the other guy never had. All his heavy weapons still get to fire just like turn one did, plus the rest of the army. So I struggle back and forth still to decide if turn two is almost the more impressive firepower. You will take the first punch, but your returning punch will be twice, if not three times as strong. And that's the part you got to balance to see which one was actually better. And I don't know. That's going to come down to a lot of
the
factors.
The balancing comes. Turn one allows you to you fire with your arguably most important impactful weapons, and you have an opportunity to position yourself better. So you get into cover. You can take objectives. You can... in my case, right, you can turn on auras,
mm-hmm.
you can psyker, right? So these are a whole bunch of things that can have extreme benefits that you simply don't have if you go turn two. And I have often found that the slight advantage of having 15% more shots or something is nowhere near getting to cover or move, you know, getting to the objective. Or these are things that I think are invaluable. And to be fair, guys, we have to be to different armies.
Absolutely. A hand-to-hand army is going to feel very differently than a shooting armies. Army.
Yeah.
Turn one and two.
So, for instance, Jesse often uses this ability where, you know, at a distance, he is a minus one to get hit, or something, right?
To that effect, that ability I wanted to bring up, do you think that ability where people are having these shrouds or these minus one to hits at certain distances, do you think that is in play to combat turn one?
I don't know. The rules are unclear. I have assumed that they are. I don't know.
Like, from a designer's perspective, do you think they're being introduced to trying to mitigate that alpha strike of turn one that is potentially more powerful?
It has been my impression, though, that there should be a pre-game phase where people turn on their armies, so to speak. Like, you flick the switch, you know? Because there's some things that are just so awkward about the first turn. Like, for instance, I have a Tau Riptide, right? And everybody likes to rail about how it's a terrible unit. It is not a good unit, right? But I enjoy playing it. I think it's a beautiful model, and it has its use. But for instance, the Tau Riptide's use, which a lot of people rip on it, but it's really useful because it has a ridiculous save if you turn it on, right? You have to turn it on. If the Tau Riptide can get shot from everywhere on the board, it's this titanic unit, so if you don't get turn one, it's going to get blown off the battlefield.
So does it not get to activate its ability at the beginning of a battle round?
Correct. It does not.
So it has to be during your turn.
Right. So that's awkward. And the thing is, like, what about as you put it, what about army-wide auras? Like, are those, is that happening? Is it, I don't know.
Yeah, interestingly, because some of my stuff is worded where some of my abilities begin at the beginning of a battle round instead of a battle turn, which means if you go first, I still get to choose mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like my Canticles of the Omnisci gets rolled at the beginning of the round.
Yeah.
So I and choose
army wide abilities. Yeah. Army wide abilities, I think, are always on. They're just always on. But, you know, let me be blunt. I think this is, my impressions are limited here because I don't have a codex. And I'm assuming that they are going to be doing something with my army in literally like a month and a half or something like that. So it's difficult for me to really say because I feel like I'm literally a year behind some armies. So we'll have to see. But the benefit is I don't have a codex. So sky's the limit. I mean, they can really adjust my army in terms of its inadequacy, whereas some people have a codex. Well, this is your army. This is what you're going to get short of errata. You know what I mean?
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with a little bit of hobby talk and what games we're gaming. And we're back. So let's shift the focus a little bit more to the hobby side and less the gaming side. And I mean that by, let's talk painting. Let's talk what we're doing to get our painting done, the collecting aspects. And separate from that, separate from the recent games of Warhammer we played, what is occupying our time? Like, what is your hot video game? What's your hot board game? What gets you excited, and what are you looking forward to?
For me, I spend the time, if I'm not painting, on my Switch. I'm old school, so I keep going back to Skyrim. Skyrim on the Switch, by the way, if you haven't tried it, amazing. Graphics are great. I've got at least 550 hours logged in the original Xbox. Maybe 150 hours on the Xbox One. So as you know, I'm a big fan of the game, but I'm back to it now on the Switch.
And the Switch is fun.
The Switch is amazing. I love that damn thing. For as small as it is, I mean, the graphics are great. Love the fact that I can disconnect the controllers, turn it into a standard Xbox-style controller with the little controller rack.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm loving that, but my focus really now is going forward to about a month and a half to Far Cry 5. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to killing some middle Americans.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Far Cry as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. What, you play any phone games?
I'm still a creature of habit. I've been playing Clash of Clans. Gosh, going a little shy, but just about 4 years right now, quite frankly.
Wow.
Lead a pretty strong guild. Clans got, oh gosh, couple hundred wins, barely over 100 losses. I'm pretty happy with that. The group's, we've got about 20 strong still.
Nice.
Going strong.
Joel, what have you been gaming?
You know, I haven't been gaming that much, but when I have been, I have been playing The Devil's Game. I have been playing Star Wars Battlefront 2. I know that there was a lot of hate for this game, certainly a lot of bad press. It's really undeserved. It's really kind of a tragedy. It's such an enjoyable, well-crafted, amazing game. I adore playing it every time I boot it up. I think it's because, though, like, you know, we're a bunch of grown-ups. I really could care less if people pay to win and stick a bunch of cards on their stormtroopers. That's not why I'm playing the game. I don't care. You know, like,
it's not a competitive
game. Yeah, it's, I don't see it that way. You know, I play the heroes versus villains mode competitively because it, to me, it's Overwatch with Star Wars characters. So I just love it. It's incredibly fun, and it really does not deserve all the boo, hiss, hate, except for the fact that the loading times are the slowest I have ever seen in a modern game, to the point that I don't understand it at all. However, the only thing I can say is the graphics and sound are so good that maybe it really does just take that much power, and they have to preload all the assets or something.
Even the last one and this current one, like they no other Star Wars game has captured the audio so well, of feeling like a Star Wars movie.
And I play a lot of the heroes versus villains, and I spend almost all my credits and cards in that mode, just getting my heroes up, you know. And you see the graphics, like you bring Darth Vader in on like a rainy battlefield or something, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, like the rain effects on his helmet and the glow effects from his saber. And I think the game's beautiful. It's super fun, and believe it or not, it has a pretty lively, dedicated community. I think that it was a little overblown, and people wanted it to fail because, admittedly, the infrastructure on that game was atrocious, and it deserved to fail in that respect. But the game itself is stellar. And they've, you know, while Star Wars was out, the movie was out, they really fixed a lot of the issues in the economy. They gave out, you know, bonus chests and credits and free heroes
free DLC and
stuff free too, DLC.
Right?
Yeah. And so. You know, they are making good on their promise of supporting the game and giving you free updates and fixing things as they go. And this is the modern gaming world. I mean, things don't get released perfectly. I mean, look at PUBG. It's been in quote-unquote beta for like 2 years, and it's one of the most played successful games. Is it even a game yet?
It's out.
Oh, is it out?
Only recently, yeah.
The game has been out for a year and a half. They just don't want to say it's out because then they're subject to reviews.
Interesting to deviate you for a sec on PUBG, because I just happened to reinstall it, having played it in the during its beta phase, playing it in final release. That game has dramatically improved its quality.
100%.
It runs at a higher frame rate. The graphics look better. The stability is better. I mean,
the developers are listening to the player base. The player base said, we want another map. They give another map. They say, this stuff feels wonky. They fix the wonky stuff, you know? I mean, I feel
that game's feel more complete now than it ever has. And I think the difference between them being in their finished beta stage versus their true live, I was not expecting a difference at all. And surprisingly, to their credit, it feels like a complete game now.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
Well, I quite like PUBG. So, I mean, I do. So, I was merely teasing the fact that it seems like there are a lot of these games that are in beta forever.
Right.
And you're just like, wait, is that in beta? What was some of the other games? Like Dead by Daylight and all these games. And they're all over Twitch. And I'm like, but these games are finished. And they're like, oh, they're not actually out yet. Really? But
and that was the nice thing about PUBG is they didn't charge you the full $60 for it. You pay $30. You know what you're getting into. You know there's going to be issues. And you have to play through that. And
Fortnite.
Yeah,
Fortnite's
another one.
Yeah, I was like, Fortnite's out, right? No. Oh, really?
But the frustrating thing with games like Battlefront, let's say, you know, is that you go and purchase a title for $60, and it's a AAA title from AAA developers. You're expecting fit and finish. You're expecting a turnkey game. And when you don't get it, it's highly frustrating. I will forever remember my experience with No Man's Sky. That was
We all played that.
No Man's Sky.
Oh gosh! Oh, I mean, fortunately for me, my buddy said, "You know, look, you got 24 hours. Get a hold of Steam and get your money back." And I did, because I mean, the promises that were made for that game were completely unfulfilled.
Yeah.
So
you are spot on there. It is. You definitely have to expect more from a AAA game.
And I want to ask you about Battlefront. I mean, how do you feel from a first-person shooter perspective? Does it play well? Because I mean, like, nothing frustrates me more than playing a fast-paced first-person shooter and it just feels slow. And I know it's not first-person all the time. I think it's also got third-person.
You can play
either. Yeah, so Nobody plays that game in first person. No. I've never seen a Twitch streamer play it in first person. I've never played it in first person. It is,
but it is available.
It is available. Okay. Yeah, you can't.
Actually,
you can.
I play it in first person.
That's awesome. I've never actually even seen it. I wonder
I hate third person.
Same here.
What do the heroes look like? I wonder if can you play like Darth Vader first
all
person?
All heroes are third person.
Oh, okay. So I should clarify.
You can't play
regular. Unless the developers push me via reward to play another mode. I only play heroes versus villains. Because to me, it's playing Overwatch and Star Wars, and I can't imagine something better in this life than playing Overwatch and Star Wars together. Yeah. And it's certainly the. See, now I'm going to reveal why I'm a Tau player, right? It's certainly the most tactically interesting strategic game. Mm-hmm. Galactic Assault, while awesome, it is awesome, trust me. And a lot of people only play that mode. Like, to me, it basically seems like, let's just run around, let's shoot some things. You have 60 people playing the thing.
It's barely a tactical game, but I want to play in the movie for a while.
Yes, that's what it feels. Yeah, that's exactly it. So you're running around, you're in the movie. I could care less if I die. I'm just going to respawn. And people are so concerned with, oh, what's my kill to death ratio? I'm like, dude, it's what? Who? I'm playing a droid. I don't care.
And that's
I die and come back. Like,
I'm that guy.
Yeah, I'm that guy.
I'm getting the DPS.
So yeah, it's super fun to immerse yourself in the movie. I don't take any mode seriously except for Heroes.
I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably why a game
Heroes
like...
versus Villains is super fun. And the other thing is, just like Overwatch, you can't get super mad in Heroes versus Villains because you're playing with a team and sometimes your team is just completely clueless.
Yeah.
And if anything, Overwatch can be really frustrating just because of the nature of the game and everything moving together. In Heroes versus Villains, sometimes you play with people that seem so incompetent that it's almost amusing and the animations are almost funny. Like, I don't know. There's no other way to put it. Because it's already semi-ridiculous because you have all these heroes from Star Wars fighting each other with, you know, incorrect timelines and everything. So it just ends up funny if Luke jumps into four Sith at once and you're like Leia up on top of a rafter going... Why would you? What? No. Like, what? How's that? How's that going to work out for you, Luke? No, that's terrible.
Well, Joe, what have you been playing?
I've been trying to get away from it. I've tried numerous games. I even tried going back to WoW. You know, when I got out of the military, WoW was the first game I jumped into. Played it for a long time. Thought, you know, it's my first love kind of deal. But I keep coming back to Overwatch. As frustrating as that game can be for me, I can't find anything more exciting. I play Path of Exile. I play Diablo. I'll try any genre. You know, Civilization can hook me for hours, but, like, just this deep within my soul just pulls me back towards Overwatch. I mean, I hate the meta in the game right now. The meta with, you know, Junkrat being just way overpowered and Mercy being a must pick in competitive is just so frustrating to me. I like playing hit scan type characters like Anna, McCree, things like that, where it takes like real raw aiming skill to do that. So like when you see people, and I'm not saying that it doesn't take skill to play these types of players, it does, but it just feels like when you have these must picks, it is frustrating because I feel like I'm as Anna, she's like a joke pick right now, and like she was my bread and butter. Season 2 of competitive, like, you know, you could do a triple tank meta with her where you're a single healer healing 3 tanks with Anna. She was so good. They nerfed her, they brought her back a little bit, but like Mercy's just a must pick right now. Even pro players hate that about the game, but you know, they're pro players, they have to play the game in whatever form it comes. But it's still exciting because they're still making changes. It's Blizzard. It's a big name. You know they're going to put stuff behind it. The Overwatch League is just super polished. It's really fun to watch these guys play. The commentators on the game are getting better so that when you watch it, you can actually see them break down these plays. You can actually become a better player by watching Overwatch League, whereas before, you're watching these big tournaments and you're like, I can't see a thing that's going on. Like, you can show me Shadowburn playing Genji all day, but I have no idea in the greater context what he's doing. All I see him is slashing a sword through everybody and killing an entire team. That's good. I know that. But, you know, now they've gotten to a point where they can break down a game. They can tell you how much damage a player is doing every 10 minutes and how fast he gets his ult, and this is what you need to do, you know. I love the fact that the game is developing, and it just keeps bringing me back as much as I get mad at it. And, you know, like, I've had my wife make me quit the game, take breaks from it, because I will just get so mad at a team that, like you were saying, I can't do anything about. I can't change the way they play, you know, but I really have kind of zend myself out with it, because I know that I'll get banned from the game by the wife if I can't control my anger issues. And like that's a big issue in the game, right? There's a lot of toxicity in the game. So I'm really having to control myself and not being one of those players and not contributing to it and trying to stay positive. So I feel like it's a learning experience for myself as well, helping me grow in that respect as a gamer.
Have you guys watched the Overwatch League?
No, I'm not. No.
I think it's important for every gamer, even if you don't play a lot of Overwatch, to at least check it out, because this amount of money, as far as I know, has never been spent on professional video games. Yeah. And the things they did went even far beyond what Riot's done with League of Legends, in that they have guaranteed salaries and benefits for these players. There's a guaranteed min.
Yes.
And it's really, really impressive, I think. The quality's amazing, and I agree that they really had their ducks in a row. It's Blizzard, so they had their ducks in a row, and their broadcast quality's amazing.
And they're holding their players to a very high standard.
Yeah.
For example, one player from the Dallas Fuel, his name is XQC, just got banned for 4 games because on his live stream on Twitch, he was slandering another player. You know, and Blizzard, and both his teams said, we're not going to stand for that. So these guys are being held to the same standards that, like, you know, real athletes are being held to, because they are getting that paycheck. They can't just go and act like children, because these are pretty young kids that are playing, you know. Some are barely over 17, 18 years old. I mean, some are sitting on the bench because they haven't quite reached their birthday yet. So I really like the direction that it's heading.
This is huge, because immaturity and toxicity has always plagued esports. In fact, it's probably what has kept it from becoming a real thing.
Sure.
The immaturity of a lot of video game players, it depresses me because I love gamers, but a large part of the population is very immature. And I think that's an issue, right? If you stick a camera on them and they can't articulate anything that they're doing, and if you stick a Twitch camera on them and they're being loud and obnoxious and swearing and possibly sexist or racist, or these things have all happened in the last year. Twitch is a thing. I mean, it's growing and growing and growing. I watch it. I'm happy to watch it.
You saw how Dr. Disrespect, his entire career was ruined because, I mean, like, he cheated, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
and so the reining in of toxicity and immaturity, It had to end sometime, and I think the Overwatch League doing that and slapping a whole bunch of professional uniforms on these guys, they look like athletes. It's a pleasure to see. I think it's pretty cool. It's what they always deserve to look like, but for some reason the gaming community has for so long been like, I do this, I don't do this, you know, I'm a special unicorn. It's really like their thing, right? But, you know, gaming is so mainstream now, we're just not really that special. Everyone kind of does it. Yeah. I mean, there's millions and millions of people playing phone games or
Layla's on
Overwatch
level, like, 1,500
or
something of her gardening game.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
So to think that you can kind of act like, oh, I'm different, I'm weird, I'm, you know, like, no, you just kind of look lame.
Yeah.
And that's gone from the Overwatch League. I don't know anything about League of Legends, so I'm not ragging on any of that, or, you know, I don't know. That's the biggest esport, but I'm impressed that it feels like you're watching an ESPN broadcast, and that's not a bad thing.
I'm looking forward to checking that out.
It's a good thing.
Well, on my side of the table, we've been playing boatloads of Kingdom Death.
Yeah,
I've been thoroughly enjoying that. I just finished painting the Kingdom Death set. With the exception of 2 monsters, those we have not encountered yet, so I'm not in any rush to paint them. But we have been playing actively with Joe and his wife, which has been a lot of fun. And I love playing it with my wife too. So we have it's kind of like our adult game we play. So it's a very adult game to begin with. So it is so brutally wonderful. Like, it's one of those games where, like you said, you don't mind losing sometimes in Warhammer. This is one of the games you go into almost expecting to lose and love it and relish it when you win. It's so unforgivingly mean to you, but
it does become almost comic, though.
But in a way,
in a way that
makes you happy somehow.
Yeah,
it will unforgivingly just say, 4 of your civilization die. Go ahead and pick 4 to be dead. And you're like, oh, what? But like in the context of the game and the story, and how players come in and out of your civilization, it makes sense and doesn't feel overly punishing.
Yeah.
Or it feels equally punishing as the rest of the game consistently delves out. And I love it. Like, I would be playing it more often than I could. I just, you know, got to play it at a pace that Layla's willing to play.
It's sure. nice that they did that. You know, I think it's what separates it from RPGs and makes it a board game at that point. You can't, you don't have time to spend to attach yourself to any one character because they're probably going to be gone by pure random chance in some cases.
Sometimes, you know? Yeah. Sometimes you know? Some unlucky roll and your favorite guy's just, sorry, he doesn't have a leg anymore.
Right.
Like, oh man, that sucks.
Sure.
We absolutely. Have people, we have two people dedicated to sitting in the back at town and having sex and making babies. Like, that is their lot in life now because they both have broken backs and, like, a bunch of other, like, deformities through battles that they've had. They just, two old yeah. people having sex. You know, it's great.
I know.
But that, so that's our, that's my board game side of things. On the digital side, I have been playing and looking forward to a lot more Warhammer Total War 2, looking forward to the Tomb King army coming out, which I'm really excited about because I historically have painted a large army of those and have always been a favorite. On the phone side of things, which I'm surprised some of you guys didn't mention, the other Devil's game.
Oh, yes.
Which is the South Park Phone Destroyer. Still in love with that game.
Adorable
it's,
game.
It's too hard not to play. It's,
and Doug's playing it too.
I just got a free pack while we were talking today.
Oh, man.
It is,
I
would like to spend the last 5 minutes of the show just chatting about that game, because I think it really is something, I don't want to say special, because I think that puts it, it is a special game, but in air quotes. It is, it's one of those games that its production value is probably higher than you'd expect it to be. The depth of the game is deeper than you'd expect. And all presented, like South Park typically is, in a very cartoony and simplistic way. But there is legitimate strategy.
Oh, yeah.
That goes way beyond what you could really understand with 10 or 15 minutes of playing it.
It's funny, but it seems like a mashup of like a card battle game and Warhammer, because you actually do have a battlefield where you place guys, and where you put them matters, and the role that they do matters, and you can win games that you shouldn't have won by doing the right thing and putting units where they should go, and you can lose games you should have won by putting them in the wrong place.
And we have a reckless dice. I think they're called teams or guilds.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to join us, our team name is Super and Cereal. So that's
with an ampersand.
Super, ampersand, and then cereal with a C. Like the kind you eat.
I you know, you introduced this game to me, and I just adore it. It cracks me. It's the only game I play on my phone. I ditched Hearthstone for this. I can't believe it. I played Hearthstone for years, and I was, don't get me wrong, I was kind of losing interest in Hearthstone for a couple reasons. But I basically just only play this game whenever I reach for my phone now, which is not that often, but I do love this game because I've never laughed so hard or chuckled to myself so hard when I'm playing a game on my phone. It remains funny to me, which I can't get over.
Well, and it also, it has reinvigorated my love of South Park.
Yes.
But it is also, they keep the show or the game in sync with the show, or at least did for the first several weeks, whereas the show would do something, that week's event in the game would be synced up with it, and you'd get a new card or a new character or something that is based on what you just saw on the show, which is, I think I love that idea. And when the second half of the season comes out, I'm hoping they will continue that. But anyway, if anybody's interested, definitely check out South Park. Highly recommended.
Yeah, yeah. And it's certainly always, I was telling Doug, who said, oh, I often play it with the sound off. I said, oh, whenever you can, put in earphones or play it with the sound on. Because
hysterical.
The sound is really, it's half the enjoyment for me, because the little quips that they say when they come in, or when they beat people, or when they're fighting, or I still hear new things. I don't know if they are constantly adding voice lines.
Well, there's to certain
the game,
combinations
or,
where if one
yes.
character is on the board at the same time as another, they have unique sound bites.
Yeah, and they have lots of different like oomphs and ows, and they say them in different ways, and it's just the animation is of course South Park, and it's to me it's irresistible. It's just too silly and hilarious. It's awesome.
So with that, we'll wrap up this episode. Thanks you guys for joining us tonight. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us at Reckless Dice on Facebook and Twitter, or you can email us at recklessdice@gmail.com, or visit us on the web at recklessdice.com. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night. Night.